This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Coming up this hour, Roddy Jones, Mark Herslick. We look forward to those interviews and conversations. And should be a tremendous weekend of entertainment with football and basketball going on. Great win for NC State's women's program last night, knocking off number one South Carolina. It's been a good week for the Wolfpack. We'll see if that continues throughout. Clemson's got a chance to clinch their spot. Notre Dame's good to go for December the 19th. We just had Mike Tirico on. Joe Giglio breaking it down with all those trophies in the background. Looking at another one if NC State can make it 7 ACC wins for the first time since Dirt. We'll see how that plays out. But nevertheless, Wes, your partner on television for games, for football, is about ready to join us because you guys have Western Carolina and UNC tomorrow. And Roddy Jones is first up in the Power Hour. Roddy, how are you?
I'm good, guys. I'm just glad that you got Tirico back, because when that story ended, like as you said, Pac, like The Sopranos, I was like, no, take me, take my audio, leave him, leave his alone.
Right. I mean, that was like there's nothing better than when you're in a great series on television or you're reading a great book and all of a sudden you get to the final spot, the chapter, and it's gone. Something's been ripped out. You're like, no, you can't have that. So Tirico came back. He's a pro, so we appreciate him doing that. All right, so you and Wes have this game, Tar Heels, after really kind of, let's be honest, they got thumped in the second half by Notre Dame. Something tells me Sam Howell and the boys will be rocking it tomorrow. So that's what I feel like.
Yeah, they absolutely will be. I think that this game isn't a matter of how well North Carolina plays or how much North Carolina wins by. It's more how well they play en route to a big win. Look, they're going to overmatch Western Carolina in a lot of ways during this game. So they're going to look internally. You know, how sharp can you be in the pass game? How early and how well do the young guys play? And ultimately, it's going to come down to alignment and assignment for North Carolina as they look to make a run down the stretch here and finish the season strong. It's been a season of ups and downs a little bit. They've let some games go that they probably feel like if they played it again, they would have a good chance to win. I'm thinking of Florida State and obviously Virginia. But with an opportunity to finish strong, I think North Carolina is going to look at it as a goal, because if they are to finish strong, then they could easily end up as a top 15 team.
You know, the other part about this too, Roddy, is Carolina is one of those schools where you look at the veteran pieces, and it was interesting. We had Darren Richer on yesterday, and he was the first player, I guess, who's been on this show that kind of hatched the idea, right, Pac, that, hey, I might be interested in coming back next year as a senior. Carolina has a couple of guys who, you know, if it works out from a scholarship and economic standpoint, Roddy, probably benefit from coming back next year. I'm not saying it's anybody of headline, but still, they're building enough there that anybody coming back would be interesting. Tomorrow, there's a window to see some of those younger guys, though, that could be huge pieces of what next year's Carolina team will be like as well.
Yeah, when we talk to Mack Brown later today, I'm going to be really interested to talk to him about what is that evaluation of who comes back and who doesn't. I'm sure a lot of that obviously falls on the player. When you look at a guy like Michael Carter, who's already accepted an invite to the Senior Bowl as a senior, he's ready to move on, and he's ready for the NFL. So you don't blame him for going. But who else on this team is going to look at coming back is going to be the big question. There's been some indications that maybe it could be a Tyrone Hopper or some other guys. So we will have to see. But as you said, looking towards the future, like I don't know who Javonte Williams and Michael Carter's backup is, because these guys play so much and they play so well. So I'm interested to see who the next wave at running back is going to be, and some of these other spots. You know, receiver, we know about Emory Simmons, we know about Choffrey Brown as the next wave, but who are the guys behind that are going to be working in the rotation with Sam Howell that he's going to be throwing to? Then on the defensive side of the football, seems like everybody in that secondary is young, but as you go deeper, who are the guys that we're going to hear about in the spring that are competing for jobs? So I think we'll see a lot of those guys tomorrow.
I'll bet you $1 million to a bag of donuts that if North Carolina loses this game tomorrow, they will not move up in the college football playoff rankings next week. You want that piece of that bet?
No, I mean, yeah. Look, I think that North Carolina is going to win the game, so I'm gonna pass on a bet. If I can get on your side of the bet, no. Then I would be more than happy to get some action on it. But no. I don't have the million to back it up like you pack, so I don't know if anybody would take me seriously.
Well, that's a good point. All right, so let's get on to the next game because this one's got a bearing on the ACC championship race. It's going to be a chilly in Blacksburg tomorrow night. Here comes Clemson and Virginia Tech off a very disappointing November. They've had 2 weeks to get ready. They're playing for a winning record. They've got Wahoo Wah coming up. They've got Clemson rolling into town tomorrow. You're going to find about the want to, aren't you, about Virginia Tech tomorrow night?
You definitely are. And I think the biggest surprise of this season for Virginia Tech has honestly been the defense. I mean, if you'd have told me at the beginning of the season that Virginia Tech was going to have the 14th ranked defense in the conference in terms of total defense and the 14th ranked defense in the conference in terms of yards per play, I would not have believed you, because I thought this defense, with everything they had coming back, was going to be one of the better units in the league. They just have not played that way. So we are certainly going to see about the one. So we've already seen some exits, not overly surprising exits from this Virginia Tech team. But look, Virginia Tech has had a disappointing last stretch of the season. They offensively have gotten worse running the football since that Louisville game. Now, look, the defenses have gotten better, but they've got to get it going. They've got to get it going again on the offensive line to have any sort of shot against Clemson tomorrow. I don't expect Clemson has much of an issue because of what I said about that defense. That defense just has not been very good this year.
All right, Roddy, Pack is predicting a Travis Etienne blast off tomorrow. Do you buy?
Look, I don't know if I completely buy it, because like what I said about Virginia Tech running the football, Clemson hasn't been very good running the football. They're averaging their lowest yards per carry since 2014, when they were under 4 yards a carry. They have not run the football very well, really, since that Miami game. That's the last time Travis Etienne went over 100 yards. And it kind of reminds me of that Clemson team in 2016. Remember in 15, Wayne Gallman's the running back, and they just ran all over everybody. The physical pounding style of Wayne Gallman. And then in 16, they really couldn't run the ball very well. They had to get Deshaun Watson involved a lot in the run game. So as much as I would like to see Travis Etienne explode, I don't know if that's the way this Clemson team is built. I know how good Travis Etienne is, and maybe he pops one, but I just the more I've seen, the more I feel like that's not the way this team's built. They're going to have to win in other ways, kind of like that 16 team did, with down the stretch. It was Deshaun Watson carrying the ball 21 times in the national championship game. And even though his yardage wasn't high in those crucial moments, he was the one picking up those big first downs, and Wayne Gallman was a little bit more of a blocker. This team kind of reminds me more of that in terms of their ability to run the football. So maybe it happens. I don't know. I just think Clemson's really struggled to run the football consistently since Miami.
For the record, I didn't predict it. I said we're overdue to see Travis Etienne explode.
That is certainly true.
That's what I said. All right. Now, let's get to Miami and Duke. You know,
since they, dirt.
Excuse me? No, there was no since dirt.
Since dirt.
No, you got to use it right, Wes. You and Tariq, you play-by-play guys haven't got it right yet. There's a difference between a stat like since 1905. That's not a since dirt. Since dirt means it's never happened before.
Okay.
Right? Like Dabo Sweeney has not lost to Virginia Tech since dirt. That's a fact.
That's it.
All right. That's how that works.
That's a good one.
Okay. All right. That's how that works. Dabo's 5-0 against them. All right. I'm switching gears. Right. Miami, top 10, and it's almost like, don't talk about them. It's weird, isn't it? I mean, the U's got such a national following. They're in the top 10. And quite frankly, they've been completely overshadowed by Notre Dame and Clemson within the league in the championship game. Hey, Clemson's got to get there first. Miami still has a shot, but we finally get a chance to see the Canes play again. And maybe that's one of the reasons. We have the college football playoff rankings. Miami's been off for 3 weeks, and it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind a little bit. But what do you expect to see from the Canes knocking off some rust here against Duke?
Well, it's not just disrespected and overlooked in the ACC. It's disrespected and overlooked nationally. I mean, Iowa State went down and squeaked out a win against a very average Texas team and jumped them in the rankings as a two-loss team. So, you know, go figure that. I expect Miami to come out and play like their hair's on fire. We've seen it with teams who have had layoffs. You saw it with Clemson. They absolutely came out and played like they had had all the pent-up anger and energy of hitting each other for a number number of weeks. So I expect Miami to come out and play really well. Duke has obviously struggled this season. We don't need to go into the Duke Blue Devil side of it. Again, it's kind of about Miami for Miami. These games have been close in the past. I don't expect this one to be. I think that front of Miami on the defensive side of the football is going to get after whoever we see at quarterback for Duke, whether it's Chase Brice or Gunnar Holmberg, and they're just really going to shut down Duke on offense. That's what I would expect. The question to me is, like we talked about with Virginia Tech and like we talked about with Clemson, how well does Miami run the football? We kind of got fooled early in the year into thinking that Miami's run game was going to be really good. It has not been down the stretch. Can they get that going against a Duke team that has struggled some on the defensive side of the football? We'll have to see, but I think Derek King's going to play great, and I would expect Miami to come out and play like their hair's on fire.
Roddy, if we have to look at the ACC, and Pack and I just did this in talking about Ian Book and Trevor Lawrence, who both have a chance tomorrow with wins to become the all-time wins leader in starting quarterbacks at their respective institutions. If we're having this Ian Book, Trevor Lawrence conversation, and we throw in Sam Howell and De'Eriq King, that's just one of about four or five spots on an all-ACC ballot that are going to be a nightmare. How important are the last 2 weeks of the regular season in you making up your mind about your ballot?
It's a good question. I think down ballot, there's going to be a little bit more of the shuffling than on like the first team. Now, there certainly is a conversation. Is it going to be Ian Book or Trevor Lawrence for me on first team? I think the quarterback position is probably the one. You and I talked about this, Wes. I think that one is actually going to end up being pretty easy, unless De'Eriq King just blows it out of the water down the stretch. I think you're going to end up seeing Trevor Lawrence, Ian Book, and Sam Howell. There's some other positions where you could get some shuffling. You know, receiver's always good, although, again, like, I think the first team, when you sit down, I think the first team's pretty easy, and then you get to second and third team, and it gets a little bit tougher. But there's a lot still to be determined. You know, we had guys that we thought were going to make first team that have since decided not to play the rest of the season. I've stopped calling them opt-outs at this point. It'll be interesting to see how it comes down the stretch. I think you could very well see in our game tomorrow the two running backs that are going to be on first team all ACC, Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. I think they've got a really good argument to be those first two guys. Now, Kyren Williams, and if Travis Etienne finishes strong, those guys are going to be in the running as well. I think running back could be really tough. But some of these other ones, they look really difficult, and then you sit down and you start to compare, and you're like, okay, this actually shakes out to be pretty easy. And I think quarterback's going to end up being one of those positions.
Ronnie, of all the games in the ACC this weekend, pick the hardest game to pick a winner.
Well, it's got to be BC and Virginia to me. I guess I should say Georgia Tech, NC State as well for my alma mater.
No, you got to pick one. Again, I know you're a Georgia Tech guy, so I'll speak slowly for you here. Hold on. You have to pick one game.
I appreciate that.
Go ahead.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate that. I'll go with BC and Virginia, right? Because I don't think it does not seem like Jeff Hafley is tipping his hand as to who's going to play quarterback for him. So you could get Dennis Grossell playing the entire game. And then you just don't know what that pass game is going to evolve into. There's a chance that Virginia could be without both of their starting safeties. It's their first game without Charles Snowden. And this was already a Virginia defense that was towards the bottom of the league in terms of pass defense. We know Hunter Long and Zay Flowers can stretch the field and get downfield, but does Dennis Grossell have the arm strength that Phil Dracovic had to be able to get it to him? And if that's not the case and he's playing the full game, then what do we get from that pass game? So that one's pretty difficult just because of the unsurety of what you're going to see from Boston College at quarterback.
All right, go to the other game. I'll give you a 1 and 1A now, because that's what to me, because the answer is between those two games, in my opinion, too. So give me Georgia Tech, NC State, and why.
Look, I think if Georgia Tech doesn't turn the ball over, then they are perfectly capable of competing with most teams in the league, including NC State. the issue is they have been really bad at turning the ball over. So that was, that's why that one's hard to pick. If Georgia Tech doesn't turn the ball over, they will absolutely be able to make this a game. Now, the question is, what does the impact of Jahmyr Gibbs not playing in this game, what's that going to have? Jeff Collins has not said that Jahmyr Gibbs isn't going to play, but I saw what happened last week. I have had hamstring injuries. I've had hamstring injuries where you end up on crutches at the end of the day, and you do not come back in a week. So I would not expect to see Jahmyr Gibbs play in this game. So then how does Georgia Tech counter the pressure that Tony Gibson's going to bring? What Georgia Tech has done a lot this season is when teams bring a lot of pressure, they dump it to Gibbs and he's able to make plays. Without that, does JP Mason, does he step into that role and is he able to do it? Is it Dante Smith, who is certainly capable but not as explosive? That's the big question for me. I think that the big receivers of NC State are going to have success against Georgia Tech secondary. Emeka Emezi is one of those guys that should be getting some hype in terms of first-team All-ACC receiver. He has been one of the best receivers in the ACC this season, so I think he'll have some success. The question is for Georgia Tech, do you turn the ball over, and how do you counter the pressure that Tony Gibson's going to bring? Because the last time Georgia Tech faced a 3-3-5 defense, it was 5 turnovers against Syracuse, 4 of those interceptions.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's a good breakdown right there. That's why you're a pro, man. You're all over. No problem.
I appreciate it, Pat. See, you had to go to my wheelhouse. I'm a Georgia Tech guy. You got to go in the Georgia Tech wheelhouse. It's just right up my alley.
Yeah, well, that was good. That you know, again, for the folks sitting at home, you know, if they're paying attention to the show and taking notes, they'll sit there and go, you know what, I'm watching this game now. Roddy brought up some absolutely spot-on analysis there. That was good. I liked it.
Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate that.
You want to ask Roddy about, you know, late game situations, third and fourth down before we go? Are you good there?
I'm good. But if Roddy's in the mood, let him. Hey, let it rip, man. You got to get it off your chest now.
Pack, look, Wes saw my frustration down the stretch with what was happening in that game. There were just so many opportunities. Look, and I hear EJ talk about it all the time. Just throw the ball away. Throw the ball away. That's all I'm going to say. There were multiple opportunities for both schools where the ball needed to be thrown away and it didn't happen. And then late game situation, I mean, I've tried to move on and Wes keeps bringing me back to that. It was traumatic, honestly.
I was trying to keep you away from it. I mean, Durham is bringing you down in that deep, dark hole again. You got to get it out of your rear view mirror. Next play. Have a next play mentality. Yeah. You know what? Did it stink? Yeah, it was bad. Bad, bad, bad. It's next play. Next play.
Oh, boy.
I think Wes and I were in person. We were standing next to each other last week, which is kind of rare now in 2020. So he saw the facial expressions that I had as these situations were going down. And he just saw the pain in my face. So I think he enjoys bringing it back up because it's a trigger. Like it's a traumatic experience.
Don't spike it on fourth and one.
All right.
Never. Never.
Don't
spike it on fourth and one.
Cannot spike it. Can't spike it.
That play.
Can't take a sack. Can't spike it.
Spiking it on fourth and one, that play has been awful since dirt. Since dirt.
Yes. Since dirt, that play has never ended well.
Since dirt. That's it. That's how you do it right there.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Mark Herzlick will be coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. Look forward to that conversation. Roddy Jones all over it as usual. And Roddy and Wes tomorrow, of course, they will have North Carolina beating up on Western Carolina tomorrow. That's the ball game. Starting things off. That's kind of a Geico sandwich, isn't it, tomorrow? You guys are sponsored by Geico for the first game.
Yeah.
Dr. Pepper in the middle, Geico at the bottom, right? We got a little Geico sandwich here on ACC Network.
Yeah.
Like it.
That's about right. Yeah, exactly. And you got the Bojangles weekend menu coming up later in the hour, too.
Yes.
So there you go.
One other thing before we go today, I would like to give, at the end of the show, I would like to give a Packer and Durham public service announcement for the safety and well-being of every ACC fan in our footprint where you can listen and or watch us. It really does involve sports, but it's something that you need to pay attention to. So that's coming up at the end of the show.
Right? Is that right?
Yep.
Is that right?
I promise you. It's very important.
Kind of a little my gift from you, me to you at the holidays type deal from Packer? Is that what we're getting?
You know, we don't do this often, but I read something about 2:30 in the morning today, and I said, you know what? I'm going to incorporate that in our TV show, and I'm going to do it also on off-campus. It's just a public service announcement to anybody who is out and about during this holiday season. It's very important. Very important. So that's coming
up. Gotcha. All right. If you missed last night, congratulations to Westmore and NC State, the number 8 Wolfpack. Last night ventured to play top-ranked South Carolina in women's basketball and a win, 54-46 for the Pack last night. Elisa Cunane, sensational, 14 points, 12 in the second half, 4 blocks. Kayla Jones, 16 points, 12 rebounds. Her second game ever with at least 15 points and 10 rebounds. South Carolina loses for the first time in 29 or 30 games. They had won 29 in a row. It's the third longest in SEC history, their first loss since November of 2019. So over a calendar year. Didn't shoot it particularly well. Gamecocks only 27% from the floor. NC State shot it well when they needed to, particularly, I thought, at the free throw line late, Pack, in the fourth quarter of play to seal the 54-46 win.
And it was a tight game. I mean, that final score really isn't indicative of how tight that game was that, all night long. That was just back and forth one way or the other. But it's the third time the Wolfpack has knocked off number one in the AP era. So, again, great win for Westmore. When we had him on the show the other day, he talked about how he would find out about his team, taking on the number one team in the country. They're young. Lost a lot of seniors off that ACC championship team from a year ago. And, man, I guarantee you, that trip home, he had to have a smile on his face because his girls played lights out. And, you know, I don't care. When you knock off number one, I don't care what the sport is. You got to play well to do it. And to do it on the road, again, Dawn Staley's built an absolute powerhouse down there in Columbia, South Carolina. This is a fabulous win for NC State.
Sure is. We mentioned the exploits of Jones and Elisa Cunane, but outstanding win last night for NC State. Here is Wes Moore after the ball game with Courtney Lyle and Carolyn Peck.
I thought our kids did an unbelievable job. I couldn't be prouder of them. And, you know, I'm just so – this is such a big win to go on the road, beat number one team in the country, and shorthanded, so to speak. So, I you know, we may not practice real hard tomorrow.
Enjoy it, man. 24 hours. You got to enjoy that one.
Yeah. There you go. South Carolina, coached by the former Virginia star Dawn Staley. As happy as Coach Moore was, Coach Staley, not so much postgame.
We just had no flow. I mean, we were, you know, we were a team that I've never seen before. Like, I've never coached a team that performed that way. I mean, it was pickup basketball. I'm just not used to it. So we're going to have to figure some things out. Not a totally bad loss for us. I think it will open our eyes to see where we need to be and how we need to play every time we step on the floor.
She is a great coach, and I have no doubt they'll bounce back.
Yes, sir.
I mean, Dawn Staley, like I said, has built a powerhouse at USC, and they'll bounce back. I have no doubt. I mean, they're too good. And, again, NC State last night was a better team, took care of business. Great win for Westmore, and where they go from here, we will see. But Louisville, Syracuse, NC State, off to blazing starts, could be three really, really dynamic teams in the league.
Let's give you a quick trip here on the scoreboard last night on the men's side. NC State a winner also on the men's card up at the Mohegan Sun in the bubble, if you will. Jericho Helms, Devin Daniels paced the Wolfpack to a large win, 31 points against UMass Lowell. Helms from deep out front, he has really done a nice job developing his perimeter shooting. Scores on the drive, which he could always do. Joe Giglio mentioned this earlier. I'm really intrigued by the Wolfpack backcourt. Young guys, Braxton Beverly, of course, is the lone veteran piece out there. Devin Daniels played great again last night. You see Manny Bates there around the rim as well. Keep an eye on NC State. UConn comes up this weekend for them. In the bubble. Syracuse was a 30-point winner last night over Niagara, Quincy Guerrier, 23-13 for the Orange. They made it look easy last night against the former Duke star Greg Paulus and the Purple Eagles. The story of the ball game is that Syracuse announced 2 hours before the game one of their players testing positive for COVID-19. It also, in the contact tracing, meant that five players did not play last night, one being Buddy Boeheim. His dad, the Hall of Fame coach, said after the game that it was contact tracing that sidelined Buddy. He was not the positive case. There are reports speculating it may have been a walk-on in the program, things of that nature this morning. But nonetheless, we'll keep an eye on that for the Orange, who won last night by 30. The other news story in ACC basketball is we were going to show you UNC Greensboro and Louisville today on ACC Network. That game has been canceled. The final stretches of the Wade Houston tip-off at KFC Yum Center. Also, Duquesne and Winthrop are gone from the calendar. Louisville had a player test positive, a positive test, I should say, did not say player. The men's basketball program pauses team activities because of a positive test, not necessarily a player. Their game against UNCG today has been canceled. Vince Tyree saying they'll fall into the protocols that the ACC has set up. Louisville at 4-0, however, adds no determination has been made about their next two games. And, Pac, this is where it gets to be kind of tricky. The next two games, the ACC Big Ten Challenge against Wisconsin next week, and then December 16th against NC State to open conference play.
We'll see. Well, you know, there's nothing you can add other than we'll just have to wait and see how all these tests go. And again, it's going to be disruptions each and every day. Just where we are. I mean, unlike football where you get, hey, we got games on Saturday, can we get there? Hoops during the week, if you can get the games in, man, you play. That's all you can do.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
You know, we had Darian Rencher on the show yesterday, and he won the Disney Spirit Award, something that you were able to acquire during your illustrious career. What did that mean to you, and how big a deal is that for folks that don't know the background?
So, well, I think it's a big deal. For me, it was felt like such an honor. At that time, I was coming off a year that I had just gone through cancer, beat cancer, and come back and play football again. And to be recognized for something off the field, it means the world. Because, you know, in my certain instance, I didn't necessarily have a choice. I had to beat cancer. That's kind of my only option. But for Darian, he did have a choice. You know, he had this choice to really put himself out there and make this a personal movement for him around the Black Lives Matter marches and the movement that he has done down at Clemson. And you know, I've been very fortunate enough to know Darian for a while now. I got to go and speak down at Clemson a few years ago and got hooked up with him then and got him hooked up with my Christian community up in New York and tried to help him get an internship and just been able to follow him and his journey, not only with football and with his efforts in the community, but also in his walk with Christ throughout the time.
Mark, I tell you, I don't know. There have not been as many Disney Spirit Award winners as, say, Heisman winners, right? But the list of Disney Spirit Award winners is just as impressive as a Heisman list. The connection from year to year, and what a great list to be on. You know, we mentioned Tim Tebow, yourself, when Darian was announced the other day. But, I mean, the inspiration of somebody like Tyler Trent from Purdue, just the people that are honored with this, it strikes you emotionally as much as it does by whatever the impact they might have in football or whatever the case may be.
Well, I think you're right, and you could make a movie out of pretty much any of these people's names and their lives that's on this list, just because, you know, they've decided to do something a little bit more, just something more to help out your community, to help out someone else, and to have this spirit that I think the Disney organization is all about, you know, this spirit of helping, of giving back, and of perseverance. So, I mean, it's such an honor to be a part of that group, but, you know, I remember when Tim Tebow presented the award to me, because I won it the year after him. I mean, you know, I was starstruck. I was in awe. And, you know, at the same time, I was also completely bald. Not that it's changed much now, but completely bald from chemo and, you know, no eyebrows and everything. So, you know, it's it was a moment that I will never, ever forget. And I spoke with Darian yesterday, and he said the same thing. You know, he just said it was such an honor to get it. And he's so proud of the community around him, not just himself. And that's, you know, that's Darian Renton for you.
Yeah, I was going to say, James Conner, another incredible story. We have Louisville guys. I mean, the ACC has certainly been well represented with that award. And I just want to start our interview with you with that, because Darian, I've bragged about him enough on this show that if I was running a company, I would have hired him yesterday is the line, because he is such an impressive guy and is going to have great success no matter what he decides to do. But, you know, folks who kind of understand big picture, that, hey, football is just a piece of the big picture, and he totally gets it. You get it too. And again, everybody who's won that award just is kind of advanced in age, in the sense of, hey, the importance of what is important in life and taking care of business and making your communities better.
Yeah, and one, you know, just one other thing on Darian. I spoke to him last year during the season as we're preparing for one of their games, and he spent his entire offseason baptizing his teammates. I mean, that's what he did. I mean, he is a leader in that locker room. He's a spiritual leader. He's a leader in the community. Just such a fantastic young man. You're right. I would hire him right away if I ever have a company.
No question. Really impressive. There's so many impressive student athletes in the league. I mean, I think it's one of the cool things, I think, in our position. We talk about games and it's important for coaches to win, and we get all that. But when you see the student athletes on this show in particular, since we have so much fun with it, you realize the quality of the individuals, men, women, I don't care what the sport is. And really, our future's in great hands. And when you start to talk to these folks and understand that, hey, I'm going to get a great degree, but here's what I want to do to make an impact on society. Whether you're playing the NFL, the NBA, hey, that's all fine and good. But more importantly, what you're going to do to give back to your community and make, you know, be a great parent, whatever the case may be, it's impressive. And so just a tip of the hat to Darian and everybody else that's been involved with that kind of stuff. It's really, really impressive.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Hey, Mark, let me pivot here to the ball game that you and Chris and Eric have tomorrow. And we just talked to Joe Giglio about it in the last hour. Bailey Hockman's a different quarterback now than he was at the beginning of the season. This second turn is the guy at NC State. Now, certainly Ricky Person, Bam Knight have all helped him in the run game. He's got go-get-it receivers. Kerry Angeline's a great tight end. Pieces in the offensive line. What have you seen in your study, though, about Hockman and his return to the quarterback spot here in the last four or five ball games for the Wolfpack?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's interesting. You talk about his second stint. You know, he had two starts at the end of last year and then really got beat out during camp. And then with the injury, he came back, and his ability to stand in the pocket and throw the ball is something that you don't see a lot in college football anymore. So many, you know, outside the pocket, mobile quarterbacks, but he feels very comfortable in the pocket. He has the ability to get outside and make some stuff happen with his legs as well. But this offensive line has really bought into the fact that, look, we need to protect for this quarterback, and he's able to throw the ball. And it's fun because he has wide receivers that make 50-50 balls down the outside, more like 80-20 balls. You know, Mecca Emezi, there, Thomas, these guys are real playmakers. And you mentioned the running backs that are obviously adding to his success as well.
Georgia Tech was really good last week. We finally saw him after a month. You take a month off, hey, we're fresh, let's do it. But, you know, Ronnie Jones just pointed it out, and he's right. When they don't turn the ball over, they're a problem. They've got some pieces that you got to deal with. They've had great success in Raleigh, winning the last five times they've been there. Is the game as simple as, hey, if Georgia Tech doesn't turn it over, this could be a fist fight?
I think so. You know, I think Georgia Tech, to me, is a lot like Louisville in that sense, where, you know, if Louisville will hold on to the football, then they have a really good shot at games. But when they turn the ball over multiple times, they got no shot. And so I think Georgia Tech's very similar. I think Jeff Sims is a fantastic budding all-star in this league. I think that he turns the ball over far too frequently right now. Even, you know, in the last game versus Duke right before half, forced a throw that was not a very well-recommended throw that was intercepted. But those types of plays, if he can just learn to throw the ball away or take a sack, he has all the skill set needed. And with the young talent, with him and Jahmyr Gibbs at running back, this offense, I mean, they are positioned well for the future. And, I mean, anytime you talk to Jeff Collins, I know you guys had him on your show earlier in the week, he is just such a fun coach that these players are really bought into his system.
Yeah, it sets up to be a very interesting game. And Pax mentioned there's some high stakes here for NC State in terms of ACC wins and things like that. But, Mark, also, they're a proof positive of what momentum can be from one year to the next. You almost get the sense that the Wolfpack can finish this thing off. They would be somebody you'd have a little longer look at going to 21 just based on the guys they're going to have back. I mean, you got to love Peyton. I'm knowing you, you got to love what you see of Peyton Wilson defensively too, right?
Yeah, Peyton Wilson and Isaiah Moore, both those guys at that linebacker position are high quality, great players. And with watching Peyton just Wilson play, always around the football, always running to the football, that's one thing that is very evident when you watch this film that from NC State is that they are flying around defensively. They might miss a tackle here and there. They might get beat on a deep ball here and there, but they're really playing with safeties up in the box. They got huge defenders, a lot of guys who are making effort plays. And then when it starts off with probably your best defensive player, Aleem McNeil, number 29, big nose tackle, you know, anytime you got a big lineman in front of you as a linebacker, it makes your job a lot easier. So you know those two guys inside love that.
Mark, I'm going to go to your alma mater here. BC, Virginia is kind of a hard one to figure. I don't know. I don't think West does either. We were going back and forth about the status of Dracovic and also Baylor. Bailey, you got to have those guys, needless to say. But BC's been playing well in Virginia. Now that Armstrong's back and ready to roll, they've won three straight. I think this may be the toughest game to try to figure out going into tomorrow.
Well, I think Virginia's been a tough game to figure out this entire year. I mean, anytime you think, okay, you know, they're probably not going to win this game, they don't have enough firepower, then Brennan Armstrong runs for like 150 yards in the game and just they produce offensively. And defensively, you know they got the talent on the edge to get to the ball, but you know they've been beat over their head a little bit. So, you know, this offense I think is in a rhythm right now for Virginia. I think Brennan Armstrong, although he's not going to wow you with any of his numbers, he is effective and can move the chains. And it's going to be a challenge for Boston College defensively. I think anytime you have a 6'7 wide receiver on the outside and Lavelle Davis to cover, it creates matchup problems. And then the linebackers are going to have speed to stop Brennan Armstrong and his running ability.
All right, you played with some really good wide receivers at Boston College. I mean, Brandon Robinson, Rich Gannell. I mean, you played with guys, right? Zay Flowers he's got the capability to assault the record book at Chestnut Hill, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I first of all, I love the guys I played with, and I know Rich Gannell is on the coaching staff right now, coaching the running backs at Boston College. But Zay Flowers, he told me, I want to be the best wide receiver in the history of Boston College. Now, he's got a ways to go to get there, but he is on the right track. And from talking to him multiple times this year, his work ethic is there. I mean, he's got great family support, great teammate support, and he has unbelievable skill sets. To be able to play as big as he does with as little as he is, it creates a huge matchup issue and just like a hustle issue for teams trying to defend him. He's on his way to being the best receiver in BC history.
I'm going to put you on the spot, and you're allowed to change your answer. But if you did have to pick today the ACC Coach of the Year, where would you go?
Oh, great question. I might go Dave Doran, and just because you know the turnaround that he's had at NC State. You know, it's funny. I've been calling ACC games for 2 years. I've yet to call an NC State game until tomorrow. So this will be kind of like, you know, the first live in-person action I'm going to see of them. But I think what Dave Doran has done is he's taken pieces and improved guys. And this is a purely developmental team. It's not a Clemson that's going to get five-star recruits all the time. But they've always consistently have good pass rush, good defense, and their offense performance with the emergence of guys like Emeka Emezi and Persons in the backfield. I think Dave Doran, with 7 wins so far, possibly getting to 8-9, I think he could potentially be the guy as Coach of the Year.
All right. Mark Herzlich, look forward to the call tomorrow with E. Wood and Cotter. Stay well. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Final segment of the week. Been a fun week. Some interesting storylines. Mm-hmm. Football related, basketball related, COVID related. Hopefully we get the games in. And speaking of the games, it's that time for the Bojangles menu.
That'd be the weekend menu presented by our friends at Bojangles. Triple header of football tomorrow on this very channel. Western Carolina, North Carolina meet for the third time since dirt. Noon from Keenan Stadium. 4 o'clock, Georgia Tech, NC State. 8 o'clock, we welcome Tim Hasselbeck, Dave O'Brien, and Katie George back to our football coverage. Don't we, Pac?
Yep.
Number 10, Miami visits Duke.
We hope so.
And then on Sunday, women's basketball. Look at it. Noon, 2, 4, and 6. UT Martin at Louisville. Penn State at number 22, Syracuse. Charlotte visits Carolina. And Delaware is at Pittsburgh. That's the Bojangles weekend menu for the ACC. Along with a second cup of coffee this morning, by the way.
I noticed that.
All right. You said going to break that we were going to have a public service announcement of some sort. You've come upon?
Yes, and I'm going to be serious for a second. Doesn't happen often. But this is a Packer and Durham PSA. I read a story early this morning that the FBI needs our help. And I'm talking about our help. Everybody within the ACC footprint here. I read a story that the FBI is looking for a person who has robbed 16 banks since 2009, right? And they're in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Tennessee. This person is nicknamed the Too Tall Bandit. Now, I am not making this up, all right? The Too Tall Bandit. So, this person, the Too Tall Bandit, 16 bank robberies since 2009. The FBI can't figure out who this guy is. Let me just give you his description. He is at least 6 feet, 6 inches tall. He could be as tall as 6'8". And he has a terrible limp in his right leg. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm reading this story at 2 a.m., we here at ACC Network, Packer and Durham, the footprint from the middle of New York all the way to Miami and beyond, how many people do you know that are at least 6'6", could be 6'8", and have a limp? If the FBI can't find this guy, we should be able to do it. So I'm just telling you, while you're out and about for the holidays, don't matter where you are, especially in the Carolinas, Tennessee, this guy's robbed 16 banks. If you see a 6'6" guy, 6'8", limping around, just saying, might be worthy of doing your due diligence and just make sure everybody's safe out there. We can't find him. A 6'8" guy with a limp. Robin Banks with a mask. I mean, how many 6'8" guys do you know? Seriously, if you're watching or listening to this show, how many 6'8" guys do you even know? Much less ones with a limp. 16 banks the guy's robbed, Wes. 16. The Too Tall Bandit. The FBI can't find a 6'6" guy with a bad limp.
I thought we were being serious. I'm
trying to be serious. I mean, 6'8". 6'8" with a limp. Wes, how many 6'8"?
How tall are you?
I'm 6'3". 6'3" with a bad attitude. And hungry because I want one of those Bojangles biscuits right about now. 6'8". We can't find a guy in the Carolinas at 6'8" with a limp. You kidding me? FBI, let's go. I mean, listen, hey, we have to pick up our part here. I mean, listen, 16 bank robberies. Guy shows up in a skeleton mask with a bad limp. He's 6'8". We can't find this guy. For 11 years, he's robbed 16 stinking banks. Come on. We're better than that, America.
When's the last bank he robbed? When was the last time he robbed a bank, old great PSA-er?
It just happened. That's why this is a story. The Too Tall Bandit. And he's gone like a couple years between bank robberies. So it's not like he's doing it like every month. You know, he'll rob a bank, spend all the money, and go, hey, I'm kind of in the mood for a couple $100,000. Let me go down to my local franchise and limp in there with my mask. They don't know who I am. 6'8" with a limp. Just keep your eyes out there, America. Got to get this guy. to help the FBI here.
Got anybody on the ACC network fit that description? 6'8" with a bad limp.
I mean, seriously, what are the odds of knowing somebody in your community that's 6'8" with a bad limp and going, "Hey, I don't remember seeing Joe last week. Where'd he go?"
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.